that's really what I think gives you the potential to have your mobility work not only make you stronger, but also increase your overall movement capacity over the long term.
Welcome to Barbell Shrugged. I'm Mike Bledsoe here with Doug Larson and our guest. Well, we're a guest at his house.
That's right. He's hosting us.
That's right. Max Schenck. And we've already done a couple shows with you. First one was episode 242, talking about shoulders. Mm-hmm. And then we also did a Barbell Business show. So if you go to barbellbusiness.com and search Max, he'll pop right up. Mm-hmm. And on that show, we talked about productivity. So even if you're not a gym owner, I think that show would be really beneficial. Mm-hmm. If you like getting shit done, I think that's a good place to go.
I prefer to procrastinate, but I did get a little more productive after that show.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, that was good. We had a good time on that one, for sure.
For sure. Yeah. So we're kicking it in your very cool backyard. You got a legit outdoor gym set up out here.
Mi casa, su casa, man.
Yeah. You got monkey bars for the audio listeners. You got monkey bars. You got some good God, parallel bars. You got some rings. We got ropes. A lot of it, you made yourself, it looks like.
Some grip accessories. Yeah, I mean, I essentially have a fully outfitted gym here. And the gym I own, you guys know, Ambition, is about 3 miles away, which I think makes me a certifiable insane person.
I would agree.
A home gym 3 miles away from the gym that I own. But
I think I would do the same.
I think all gym owners know that they don't want to train in their gym 100% of the time, and it's just nice to have your own space.
You know, it's hard to get a session in when you're.
What the fuck is that?
I forgot to turn off the pool thing.
There's a monster.
Yeah. No, I mean, I figure it's like this: if you stack the deck in your favor, you're going to be a lot more consistent. I know for a fact that if I'm at the gym, I'm probably going to be interrupted. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not already at the gym, like if I'm like writing books or something like that here, because I'm not going to do that work at the gym either. You know, if you're busy, you know, like even a 10-minute drive both ways, like that is like valuable time. So if I can just walk outside and get like a quick 5 or 20 minutes in, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, and having frequency helps. Being able to just walk out, do a little bit if you're going to train more than once a day, or do something nice and easy. I like to do something easy and then something tough.
I think really, if you aren't doing at least something every day, you're really leaving a lot of benefit on the table, no matter what the goal is. Like, even if you're on, like, a, let's say, 4-day-a-week training plan, you should be moving 7 days a week. I mean, we're freaking animals. Like, for us to not move is ridiculous.
Yeah, my physical activity overall is higher than I think it's been in a long time, and I'm spending less time in the gym, but it's doing things around my house. Doing other things that are physical activity that might not be happening inside a box.
Exactly.
Still going in the box too, but having that physical activity, I feel a lot better moving 7 days a week versus, move really hard for 4 days and then I'm taking 2 or 3 days off and getting sticky.
Well, and I think everyone has to find like the balance with how much heavy shit they're doing and how much light shit they're doing. And I know for me, when I was first starting, I actually worked out at one of the first CrossFit affiliates, CrossFit Encinitas, like way back in the day, like almost 9 years ago or something like that. And at the time, I was basically doing heavy, heavy workouts, like, you know, cleans, front squats, deadlifts, things like that, like 6 days a week. Mm. And then my off day was like Cindy, like push-ups, pull-ups, and squats, you know what I mean? So that totally broke me down. And what I've found now is if I do like, I don't know, somewhere between like 2 and 4 days a week of heavy stuff, and then between like 3 and 4 days a week of just like body weight stuff, like movement type oriented things, I find that the strength gains are still increasing, but my body feels so much better. It's almost like I've really been able to take off the brakes on my strength while progressing on like flexibility and speed.
Yeah.
A lot of people, they would like to do something every single day, but their whole model of working out is what you just said. Like, if I'm going to train, then I have to train balls to the wall, and I have to train super, super heavy. And if I don't do that, then they feel like they didn't do anything, and they might have a good idea that they shouldn't do that every day for all the reasons you just said. Like, it will break you down, and they don't know what to do, which slides very well into the topic of today's show. Is you have this interesting concept called 5-minute flow, where you do some movement every single day, but in a way where it doesn't beat you up.
Exactly. And, I mean, you have to decide, like what you were saying before, too, with regard to what people expect out of a workout. The problem is that there are two, like, dysfunctional expectations for workouts. One of them is burning calories just for the sake of burning calories. That's utterly ridiculous. Like, there are so many fun things that burn calories. For you to do, like, a stupid workout just for burning calories is completely asinine. For you to do a workout...
Hang on. Hang on.
Back up.
How am I burning calories when I'm not working out?
You're burning calories right now by staying alive. Keep at it.
Oh, shit.
You can, like, there. If you, like, look at...
But am I burning that many? Come on,
dude.
Man.
Like, maybe you see some of the advertising bullshit. Like, they say you can burn 600 calories doing cryotherapy or jumping in a sauna for 45 minutes. Like, it's all nonsense. A lot of activities will burn calories. Salsa dancing is going to burn lots of calories. It may not burn as much as cross-country skiing, but you have to figure out which one you actually want to do so you can stick with it. So that's, like, the first dysfunctional exercise expectation. The second one is, how sore can I get, or how hard can I feel I worked? And that's similar nonsense. They think that, like, the harder you work, the more benefit you're going to get out of it, but that's completely not the case. Like, I've made much better gains since dialing it back using, like, the 80% rule, things like that, than I ever made when I was going balls to the wall, because when I was going balls to the wall, I was also getting broken all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've had a lot of athletes back off. You know, they were going hard 5 or 6 days a week, you know, spending 2 or 3 hours in the gym, and then they'll hurt something that causes them to back off. They come back, and they're even stronger. You know, they had to dial back the training, or they didn't lose so much of their strength gains or something like that. And really, they're shocked. It's like,
right.
Well, that might be a sign that you're just overdoing it. And like you were saying before, are we looking at the result or the difficulty? Because right. I know a lot of people – remember when we were running a box and we were interacting with athletes every day, and if a workout didn't completely make them want to puke or they didn't get sore at all that week, they were complaining.
Right.
And it was just – and it was like, well, that was the intent of how things were programmed right now.
Right.
But when you have clients and you have people just begging for it, it's kind of hard a lot of times as a coach. It's like trying to make the client happy and all that.
It's a tough balance to find too, because – it starts with the culture that you create at the gym. So, like, CrossFit, for example, typically has that culture that's oriented toward, like, oh, my God, like, I killed it yesterday. My legs are shot, but I did, like, the fastest time ever, and that's fine. But if that's the sole purpose, I think you're really leaving a lot of potential gains on the table.
Yeah.
So I think if you're a business owner, and I know we're not on the Barbell Business Show right now, but if you're a business owner, like, you have to create a culture – of the behavior that you want your clients to exhibit.
Yeah, and I think when we look at CrossFit, there's been this huge focus on intensity mm-hmm. over anything else. And for me personally, what I've found over time is frequency is more important than intensity.
Far more.
And you actually have to look at the volume here. Mm-hmm. You know, your it's all very important. And I think there's been this overemphasis on the intensity piece.
I think the key there, borrowing off of what you just said, is to put the emphasis back on skills. Mm. Because I always use this example. Like, if I were to give you two different options as far as practicing golf, you can practice 90 minutes every Sunday or 5 minutes every day. Which would you choose?
5 minutes
five
every
minutes.
Day.
5 minutes every day. Even though that's only 35 minutes. So on an absolute standpoint, you're at like almost a 1-to-3 ratio.
Yep.
So even though you're doing 1/3 as much total work, I would still suggest that you're probably getting about double the benefit from doing it every single day. And there are a lot of books like Mastery by Robert Greene. Have you guys read that one? I think I know you read that one.
We
I
have.
Saw you.
He recommended it to me. He's read it as well.
I really enjoyed that. It's a great book.
And I think in that book he talks about how if you do something and then sleep afterward, like every time you do something in sleep, it like helps you like reinforce and download that information.
Mm-hmm.
So not only, you know, sleeping is kind of like a break, right?
Yeah.
Just the same way, like if you take a layoff from the weights due to an injury or preferably due to like your own volition, you're going to come back a lot better. Like, I remember, same thing happened with me for guitar. Like, I just started picking up guitar about a year and a half ago. And I went to Sweden for 2 weeks, didn't play guitar, came back, and was just it was better, even though I hadn't practiced for 2 weeks, and I was practicing every day. So it's amazing what dialing it back or taking a little break or doing something every day and sleeping will do for you.
It's not even just about the muscle rebuilding. I think I know I've been in this place where I'm thinking about, okay, does the muscle tissue repair in time?
Right.
And so much of it is the nervous system and talking
exactly.
about the skills. And if you're moving better, you know, because you're getting rest and you're learning movement faster, then that's a good thing.
Exactly. Well, I mean, let's take free throws as an example. Do you want to practice free throws, which is a skill, until your arms got like a ridiculous pump in it and you can barely hold the basketball? No, that's stupid. But we do that exact thing when it comes to exercise.
Yeah.
Like we way too much training to failure, way too much training to the point where biomechanics deteriorates into something totally different. Like push-ups are the perfect example, you know? You do whatever, your first 80% of push-ups like this, and then you start doing like some sort of like
those are the
weird
best
business
kind.
Like this.
Yeah.
And that's what your body remembers, because it remembers the last thing you did more than all that stuff in the middle.
Yeah.
So even all the more reason to dial back that practice a little bit.
So we came here because we wanted to talk about flow today, and it's become a very popular thing. If you're on Instagram looking around very hard, you start seeing people do some pretty cool stuff, actually.
Totally.
And then some people, you know, like myself, trying to do cool stuff. And
yeah, I think you do cool stuff.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
Yeah.
That's what I was fishing for
that today.
I got you.
Yeah, yeah.
I got you, baby.
Yeah, after this weekend, I needed a little help. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. I feel like it was likely Ido Portal that really kind of started this trend, and then a lot of people have jumped on. There's been all kinds of other variations of flow. Like you said, you went to an animal flow workshop the other week, and then now you have your own kind of style bending on this where – you have this thing called 5-minute flow, which I think an easy way to look at that would be you have a hashtag for that, right?
Five minute flow.
That way you can see Max doing all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. It's number five,
right over there.
It's the number five.
Okay, number
it's
five.
Number five.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you do a lot of that in the backyard here.
Yeah, exactly. Every morning. Every morning I'll do something. I don't always film it because I try to typically stay off technology first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
But every morning basically starts for me the same way. And actually, I added music into the morning routine because I found that's really good for my brain. But
what type of music?
I mean, I'll play guitar or piano. And
oh, you're playing the music.
Yeah, yeah, I'm playing the music. Yeah, yeah. See, it's funny. I'd never played music my whole life, and then like a year and a half ago, I was like, I really want to try playing some music, and it's made my memory a lot better. It feels like meditation, and it's extremely fun. So I would recommend to anyone, no matter what age you are, just you know, pick up even like a drum set or something like that and just bang around on it, and it'll stimulate creativity and things like that.
Nice.
If you can't wake up in the morning after rolling out of bed and playing the drums, there's really no hope.
There's no hope.
My wife's going to be so excited about that.
Yeah, my neighbors.
I'd be in there like.
My neighbors love the drums.
Oh, I bet.
Okay, so you play a little music in the morning and then.
Yeah, so 5-minute flow basically every single morning, and it's simple. It started out basically out of frustration because I was putting together all these mobility programs for people only to check in with them and have them say, oh, I didn't really have time to do that. And I'm like losing my freaking mind trying to get people to do mobility work. And what I realized is it's not fun. There's a great mobility system called Z-Health. It's by a guy named Dr. Cobb. He's very smart. I took that course like 8 years ago or something. It was one of the first courses I shelled out a lot of money for. I was really impressed, but it was fucking boring, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like, I couldn't get anybody to buy into it. Like, mm-hmm. it works. It's, like, really isolated, focused joint mobility, and I'm sure a lot of people are doing that now, but it just isn't fun enough to get, like, the masses to buy into. So 5-minute flow, it's a finite amount of time, 5 minutes, so it feels approachable, and it was all based on behavioral psychology and a little bit of exercise science. So, I mean, we all have a pretty thorough understanding of joint mobility and things like that. But in order to get someone to buy in, you need to make it a small enough starting point. So it needs to have, like, a low barrier to entry. It's got no equipment required. It's something you do every single day for only 5 minutes. So it feels manageable. It's easier to break the inertia into something small than to say, okay, here's what you need to do. Body transformation time. Work out 2 hours a day, 6 days a week. It's like, there's no chance. Like, you're going to quit. So you have your 5 minutes of mobility. You have a big glass of water at the end. And the reason that's important is, from a behavioral psychology standpoint and habit formation is very dependent on two main things. One is a trigger that reminds you that it's time to do that habit. So if you wake up and your first habit is 5-minute flow, perfect. There's your trigger. Waking up is the trigger. The glass of water is the reward, because you need to sandwich that habit between trigger and reward. And that's part of what makes it easier for people to stay consistent with.
It's also another way just to think like how am I starting and stopping this routine? Like, a lot of people, if they don't have a set time limit and they don't have something that cues them to start and something that cues them to stop, then even if they do 5 or 10 minutes, they don't know when to quit. And so
exactly.
They go, can I just finish and then I guess I'm done. And then even though they did 10 minutes of warming up and flow or mobility work or whatever, they still might feel like they quit.
Right.
At the end of it. And then they feel like they're not doing a good job, and then they just stop doing it altogether.
Yeah.
Like, having that set pattern of trigger 5 minutes only, and then glass of water to say, okay, I am done with my routine, I can move on with my day.
Exactly.
Like, just ties the whole thing together very well.
Yeah, you move on to the next thing. And actually, it's funny you say setting the clock, because I think that, at least for me personally and the people I work with, has been one of the most important things that I've done to accomplish tasks. Because that actually breaks the inertia before you actually start doing the thing. Like, if I say, okay, I hate answering emails. It's like the bane of my existence. I still do it because I want to stay in touch with people, but I hate it. But
for all of you who tried to email me, you know it doesn't happen.
But what I find is, if I set a timer and say, okay, is email time, setting the timer itself breaks the inertia for me.
Mm-hmm.
When I don't do that, it's like every time I want to go touch the computer, I'm like, no, I'm out. I can't do it. But if I set the timer, just like with 5-minute flow, just like anything else, I feel like that really overcomes that inertia.
Yeah. I start doing flow in the morning. I don't do it before my glass of water, but I've been doing it. I've been doing maybe 10 or 15 minutes in the morning, and I was doing it before I worked out. So I would do, 10, 15, 20 minutes of flow,
right,
and then I would go to the gym, and I would work out. And one of the things I found is I wanted to do some type of movement first thing in the morning, and that seems fairly ideal to me. One of the things, I agree with you, it feels meditative in nature. It's way more fun than doing a static stretch. And for me, it creates a lot of blood flow. And I've noticed that my warm-ups, when I do go to work out, so I work out usually around between 11 and noon is when I go train. Mm-hmm. And if I did my flow work at 7, 8 a.m., my warm-up is super short now.
Because you're already more limber.
I'm already, and I don't sit in a chair.
Right.
So I'm standing at a desk. I'm walking around.
You're moving.
I'm moving. So when I do go to train, I don't need that 30-minute warm-up. I just need about 5 minutes, get the blood going again. My joints are already where they're supposed to be. And I just noticed that overall my joints feel better.
Absolutely.
All day throughout the day.
Well, and it's interesting you say that too, because there are a couple reasons for that. One is, if you do mobility work first thing in the morning, it's going to make every step you take corrective exercise. Mm. If you wake up and do nothing, like, you know how you feel when you first wake up right out of bed? You probably feel like a little bit stiff, naturally so, because you've hopefully stayed still for about 8 hours. If you do some sort of mobility work, every step you take is going to be corrective exercise, whereas if you don't do something like that in the morning, every step is just reinforcing your sleeping posture, which is certainly not ideal.
So in that case, you're just grooving a bunch of bad patterns.
Exactly. You're grooving bad patterns essentially all day until you move.
Mm-hmm.
It's really funny. We're like the only animals that like don't move around. We just go through life like moving from chair to chair. It's horrible.
So a lot of people when they...
It's true.
A lot of people when they hear mobility work, they think stretching. But that's not really what you're talking about right now. Is that correct?
Not at all. It comes down to the difference between active and passive flexibility. People typically in the past have emphasized passive flexibility far too much. Like, you know, the ability to throw a leg up and do like a forward bend stretch is not actually very useful if you don't have the accompanying active flexibility, which would be where you have the leg up and then you lift it off the table and you can just hang out there.
See that, people? That was super impressive.
I know. Showing a little leg too. So it's mainly about active flexibility. There are a lot of strength components to it in the different movements. Like, a lot of things are derived from either like crawling or yoga. I mean, really, like, yoga has been around for like 5,000 or so years. There are a lot of benefits to it. There are some drawbacks. But if you can understand the difference between active and passive flexibility and apply that to some yoga and martial arts and dance type of movements, it's actually very effective. So what we're actually trying to do is build strength in the full range of motion in all your joints rather than just simply stretch them one way or the other. So you're always more or less doing either circles or active movements like that. And then the way you tie it all together is through flow. And the reason I think flow is so important is where it gets the brain involved, right? Because what you have is you have all these different movements and positions that you learn, and the ultimate goal is to be able to decide on the fly where you're going to go next, almost like a choose-your-own-adventure kind of thing. Like, okay, I'm in this position, now I have like four different options. And the more fit you get, the more flexible you get, the better you get with your mobility, the more options that you have, right? So I think that's really what I think gives you the potential to have your mobility work not only make you stronger, but also increase your overall movement capacity over the long term.
Yeah. Let's take a break real quick. I want to get into exactly how we take steps to finding that flow.
Sweet.
All right, folks, we're back with Max Schenk talking about flow. And, you know, I actually was intimidated by flow in the beginning. You know, I'm watching all these videos, all these people are doing really amazing things, and it seemed really complicated because it's kind of like the person who posts a 300-pound snatch. You know, oh, I don't look like that, so, you know, I don't want to look foolish, I don't want to do that, I don't know exactly how it makes sense. And with the flow stuff, people are usually posting, like, the epic shit, you know, Ido Portal's doing backflips and then hanging from a tree and all this shit. And so... It wasn't until I met somebody who was able to introduce it to me in a really fundamental way where I was like, okay, just do the wrists. It's like, oh, we can just do this step by step. Interesting. Because nobody's really telling you that. They're just posting really cool shit.
Well, I think that's like the bane of social media, right? Is you see a lot of people demonstrating strength, but you don't see a lot of people building it. Mm. Like what builds strength is doing like rows, but rows look garbage on Instagram. No one cares if you do rows on Instagram.
I saw you post some rows just the other day on Instagram.
Exactly.
Garbage.
But when I do it, it looks so good.
Making rows cool.
I'm making rows cool again.
You were like, yeah, I remember it was Instagram. Posted the rows, and he's like, don't do heavy weight.
Yeah. You don't need to use heavy weights. Yeah. I mean, you look at someone doing rows, it's typically looks like some sort of heaving half continental clean. And you completely eliminate most of the benefits of the exercise, and you completely increase exponentially the risk of the exercise of hurting yourself. So, you know, taking ego out of the equation for that, the same thing can be said with 5-minute flow or any kind of flow movement. So, like, one of the things that I'll do on video is I'll stand, I'll drop back into a back bend, and then I'll stand back up. And that looks really cool, but it's not a way to build flexibility. It's a way to demonstrate flexibility. Just the same way that snatching 300 pounds isn't necessarily what built that. You know what I mean? What built that is like tons of technique practice, a lot of squatting, probably a lot of additional core work, certainly some shoulder mobility work. And the same thing is true with flow. So it's all relative, right? It doesn't matter what it looks like. It matters what it does for you. So, for example, when I'm taking a beginner, they can get enough stimulus to adapt with a set of 5 incline push-ups, like on something as high as this table. That will give them enough stimulus to grow at the same rate that it might take Doug to bench press 400 for 5 reps. You know what I mean? So
Been there.
Yeah. I mean, so essentially, it's not about what the thing is itself. It's about what it does for you. So for someone just starting out, all you need to do is make some joint circles, head to toe. Just do some neck rotations, do some wrist circles, do some elbow and shoulder circles, hips, spine, that kind of thing. And just run through that at a variety of speeds. And then as you feel more comfortable and confident, as you get more limber, then you start to increase load, complexity, and speed.
That's one thing I do like about the videos I've seen you do for your 5-minute flow is that I feel like it's very comprehensive. It hits all the joints. If I see someone warm up, very often they do some shoulder work, they do some hip work.
Exactly.
They might do a little bit of core stuff. They might maybe stretch their wrists or maybe do some ankle mobility, but they're definitely not doing anything for their neck. They're not doing anything for their fingers or their toes. Like all the stuff on the periphery gets neglected, while all the stuff that's like the big prime mover joints, shoulders, hips, etc., get all the attention.
Exactly. Well, and that's why taking a whole body approach to mobility is so important. There's a very famous therapist named Ida Rolf, who you guys are probably familiar with, has very famously quoted as saying, with regard to pain, where you think it is, it ain't. And so essentially it's the same thing. You have no idea how many people I've worked with where their wrist is causing an elbow or a shoulder problem, or their neck is causing a low back problem, or their left big toe is causing a right shoulder problem. Like, you just don't know until you work through the whole body what that's going to be. Like, the best you can do otherwise is guesswork. And unfortunately, what most people do, and I actually talked about this last time during the shoulder talk we did, is most people just focus on the ball and socket joint at the end, which is already prone to injury. It's already the most vulnerable joint. It's already the most mobile. And they don't take into consideration the whole rest of the body, which is how your brain decides that you function. It looks at your whole body as one piece and decides if it's going to be strong, mobile, and healthy enough to perform a given task.
I feel like that's really hard to sell to somebody. Like, if someone comes to you with a shoulder issue and you're like, okay, and I'm going to fix your shoulder, but you start talking about everything else that's going on with their whole entire body, they're like, hello.
Yeah.
Like no,
my shoulder.
I came here for my shoulder. I don't need to pay you $200 an hour to talk about my left hip and my right wrist and all these other things. Like,
right.
You're just trying to get more money out of me. You're just trying to sell me on all these other services.
Sure.
so you can like squeeze my wallet a little more dry, when really
totally.
All I want is my shoulder fixed.
Exactly. And I think that comes down to educating the people that you work with to understand how the nervous system works to a higher degree. And one of the things I have done with 5-Minute Flow is I've introduced the concept of testing and retesting as frequently and regularly as possible. So when I give courses on this, in the products I've put out on mobility, I always encourage people to do some sort of mobility movement and then recheck stuff, whether it seems related or not. Like, I have people do, you know, this one's great. Like, if you're sitting at a desk, you extend your wrists and fingers, you reach them out to the side, you do a couple little shoulder circles, do a couple neck rotations, and overall, it's probably one of the best things you can do if you're spending a lot of time gripping stuff and with the shoulders forward. That helps so many people improve their squat, but fundamentally, it kind of shouldn't, right? So have them do that, have them do a bodyweight squat, and they're like, wow, that's a lot deeper. And what you need to understand is that your nervous system doesn't care where the problem is. It turns on this, what is essentially like a neurological governor, to prevent you from being as strong, prevent you from being as flexible, and can sometimes also give you pain. So those are the three ways your nervous system communicates with you. It makes you weaker, stiffer, or feel pain. So those are just action signals from your brain saying, please do something different, but it doesn't specify what. Like, if your right shoulder hurts, it doesn't necessarily mean fix right shoulder. It means there's a problem. I don't want you to do this thing anymore. So you need to look at the whole picture once again and figure out where the dysfunction is. And that takes time. But the good news is, if you do approach it from a whole body perspective, you have a much better chance of solving those problems.
Mm-hmm. So for someone that we haven't really given many examples, for someone that's never seen this, even though you have your headset on and whatnot and you're kind of in a small space, maybe you can step to the side and just give us like a 30-second to 1 minute like mini flow and just kind of walk through like kind of how it looks.
Yeah, sure. Essentially, and with the headset on, I can't really do anything fancy, but if you just get started with doing some neck rotations at a couple of different planes, you learn to disassociate and move the scapula independently, which is also something we talked about during the last show, and I think that's really pivotally important. From there, then you can start working on rotation, the inner and outer spirals of the hands. And then this one's pretty challenging for most people, but being able to segmentally control your spine, I believe, is one of the most important things you can do from a mobility standpoint. There are a lot of muscles responsible for articulating each individual vertebra. And the problem is you end up having some that move too much and some that move zero. And I would recommend that you do this in front of like a video camera or something like that, so you can see where there's maybe like a lot of curve and maybe where there's a flat spot. But essentially for the thoracic spine, which some people refer to as like the keystone of the upper body, you place your hand on your sternum and you reach your actual spine backwards and you try to get everything to curve just through there, and then you push the sternum forward and close the back of your thoracic spine together, and then eventually you can actually turn that into a full circle, so you get some of that lateral movement as well.
You make that look really easy, but that's not easy to do.
This takes a lot of time to actually figure out. It's also a great dance move.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
I think it's pretty important. And then, you know,
from there. You used that in Miami just last week?
I may have used that in Miami just a little bit. so then you have, like, just, you know, your regular old hip circles. And, again, none of this is really that fancy. This is just level one.
Well, this is interesting about the spine by itself, because I think most people that are coaching strength, you know, always are like, always a straight back. And,
right.
And then it's, I think it ends up being communicated as a stiff back over time.
Absolutely. Well, and speaking in absolutes is always really dangerous.
Always dangerous.
Always dangerous. Thank you for picking up on that. but typically, the reason people say that is just they don't understand the other side of that coin. So, like, if you go to, like, a yoga studio or something, they're like, oh, yeah, forward fold, like, full curvature. And I think that's a great idea. Do I think it's a great idea to deadlift 500 pounds with a round back? Generally, no. Do I think you should be able to round your back under some load? Absolutely. Do you want to be the guy who, like, throws his back out lifting a bag of groceries? You need to be able to have some sort of strength in those weird positions, and that's kind of what five-minute flow does as well. Are you guys familiar with Saxon side bends?
I've heard of them, but I don't know what they are.
Yeah, essentially you take two dumbbells overhead, and you bend all the way over to the side as far as you can. So it's complete spinal lateral flexion. You're also getting a lot of load on the spine because of the leverage, and you don't have to use heavy weights. I mean, seriously, use like 5-pound dumbbells. Mm-hmm. It feels like
that's a lot.
Monstrously heavy.
I had my wife do those a lot when she was pregnant, because the range of motion is relatively small, especially if you do have anything over 5 pounds. You're not going to want to go that far.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you will definitely feel it in your obliques. Like, the sides of your torso will get smoked from doing that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, and when it comes to injury prevention, the way I feel about, you know, whether you're supposed to, like, curve your spine or not curve your spine, or whether the vertebrae are supposed to articulate or not, number one, if they weren't supposed to articulate, it would just be a post. Like, evolution would just say, okay, a stiff post is the best option. That's not the way it works. If at some point in your life you are going to end up in a position where your spine is curved, it's better if you have prepared it before then. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how I feel about that.
Okay, so we cut you off kind of halfway through. You're just getting done with the upper body. You're starting moving to hip circles.
Yeah, I was moving. I actually forgot wrists and fingers, unfortunately, but we'll come right back to it.
Okay.
You got paint the fence up and down. You can actually turn that into a full circle. And if you're watching the video, this looks easy, but it's actually really challenging to get your wrist to move, but not your fist. So that's where you're putting the emphasis, right? Is you're putting the emphasis on that wrist back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And then this next one, I think, is maybe the most important, where you actually turn that into a big figure eight. And the cool thing about 5-minute flow is it's very modular. So as you get more competent with these different movements going in both directions, you can start doing the movement out here. And actually, if you look at something called neuromechanics, which is nerve flossing, by doing this wrist figure eight out there, you're actually flossing your median, radial, and musculocutaneous nerves while you're doing it, which is also very good for shoulder rehab and carpal tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to the hips, I find that closed chain hip circles are really beneficial for a lot of people. So you move your pelvis, but you keep the legs completely locked. And then the other one is the pelvic circles, and that's where you're actually going to kind of use your hands to help you guide the way. And when you do this, you want to try to make eye contact with someone, usually a lot better.
And don't break.
Don't break the eye
contact.
Don't
blink, don't break. It's easier when you got sunnies on.
That's a creepy smile. You guys could only see that. And then from there, you know, You make some knee circles. And the idea with the knee circles is, once again, the knee is a hinge joint, right? Mm-hmm. And you're going to get a lot of people who say, you know, it should never go past the toes, and it should never deviate one way or the other. But as bad as squatting with a heavy weight and having valgus collapse is, everything's okay if you do it on purpose. Mm-hmm. So being able to load the medial side of the knee is a great thing. If you do it on purpose and you do it under control, then it's just going to make the joint itself much stronger. And actually, by making the joint stronger, you're going to reduce the likelihood that your nervous system is going to cut your strength when you're in a disadvantaged position. So it's going to make you safer and stronger.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
And then just ankle circles. And the key with ankle circles is you don't want your toes to lead the way. So this is something a lot of people miss, is they start to move their toes a lot, or they start to move their whole leg. But if you can really lock that down, lock the toes down, and think about like scooping brownie batter out of a bowl or something like that, or whatever dessert, it doesn't really matter specifically.
Brownies.
What it is.
For sure.
I had a brownie last night.
What were the ingredients?
Let's keep on going.
I'm no fool. Okay, so that was all. I mean,
that was a very abbreviated version, but those are basically like the building blocks of getting flexible enough to the point where you can start doing the really cool shit, like Hindu push-ups and weaving in and out of like back bends and thoracic bridges, deep lunges, and things like that. So, the cool part though is, as you get more comfortable, you do all those in those different positions. So like I find myself in all these different weird like half kneeling positions doing wrist circles and doing shoulder circles and doing scapular movements. And once again, you get the freedom to put it together the way you want it. So it's almost like an artistic expression. And it also makes it mentally stimulating enough that you want to stick with it. And you have these markers where you can really elevate your flow game. You know what I mean? Like, I'll throw handstands into my flows now and actually do some, like, leg movements up there. And over time, that should be the goal, is to enhance your movement to the point where you really have, like, complete physical freedom. And that's really what 5-minute flow is all about.
So we were talking earlier about the, you know, doing 5 minutes in the morning and then also talking about learning and not doing too much at once. And I think a lot of times, I mean, I'm one of these people that want to get all of it right now, and committing to only say 5 minutes at a time can be really beneficial in learning the skills, like we were talking about in the first half of the show. How long does it take to, when I go from like my wrist circles to being able to do handstands while doing ankle circles?
Well, that's a very silly question.
Look, I just want to look cool on Instagram.
For you personally?
Of course. We don't care about anybody else.
2 months, you could look very cool on Instagram with my help.
All right. How much is it going to cost me?
Quit trimming your beard.
A lot. It's not going to be cheap. I'm easy, but I'm not cheap.
Okay, so this was all very, very basic level one type stuff. This is basically like a high-level gymnast doing a set of push-ups in the morning to like knock the dust off.
Exactly.
That level.
Which I still think is a great idea.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Throw some push-ups in there. Why not?
Yeah, so 5 minutes in the morning, you wake up, you do 5 minutes of easy joint circles. You're just taking every joint you have through its full range of motion, just so, number one, you can keep the range of motion you have, but then also ideally, with all the other mobility and strength work you're doing, this will help you gain additional range of motion.
Right, and strength as well. And then the other thing that I forgot to touch on is the reason this is so important is that joints themselves don't have a direct blood supply. Mm-hmm. So the only way that they can be stimulated to regrow tissue and to improve the quality of that tissue is through movement. So that movement is what stimulates regrowth of tissue. So if you don't do that, everything just freezes up and basically stagnates.
Right, like if you tear your meniscus in your knee, it's an avascular tissue, and so they try to get you moving right away to push all this synovial fluid through the joint. That way you actually have some new nutrients coming in and waste products being removed.
Exactly, and it's amazing how few people take all their joints through their full range of motion every day. I mean, it's really fascinating, too, because when I first started with 5-minute flow, literally, I just had a blog that was the only instructions were me showing people how to do joint circles. So I've had like hundreds of people email me, send me messages on Facebook that things like to the effect of, for years I thought I had bad knees and a bad back. But until I started doing this, I just realized I had a mobility problem. So like people are emailing me with no specific instructions whatsoever that their pain has been eliminated. And it comes down to do it every day and do the whole body. Like, I don't know how to evaluate someone over the internet who I've never met before. But I do know that if you stay away from painful movements and move your joints every day, you will get better. I mean, it's just guaranteed you will improve.
I would say this is really important for rest days, you know.
Yeah.
I think that there's a lot of days where I don't do anything intense. And on the days I'm not doing something intense, I might spend 30 minutes doing flow work.
You should
and I feel amazing.
Exactly. You should still sweat every day. You should still move every day. Just because it's flow doesn't mean it has to be ridiculously easy either. I mean, you can do a set of 50 Hindu push-ups as part of a flow if you wanted to.
Yeah.
You know, it really depends on what you're trying to achieve with it and what else you're doing in the rest of your week.
It's interesting. We were talking about getting nutrients in and out of the joints. And I was recently talking to this, he's a president of a chiropractic school, and we were talking about getting nutrients to the brain through the spinal column. And he was talking about getting that spine moving, as you were discussing before, and that actually can really help with cognitive function as well. So it's good for the brain to get your spine moving. So having that stiff back all the time may not be great for brain function as well. Have you heard that, or am
no,
I?
But it sounds 100% right. Honestly, I haven't heard that before, but I certainly believe it. There are a lot of things that are dependent on movement, like lymph, for example. So like the lymphatic system, it doesn't have a driver. You know, your heart pumps blood, but nothing pumps lymph. So the only way that you move lymph around is by moving. And if you only move some stuff, you're really not going to move that much lymph. But if you move everything.
Can I just jump on a trampoline?
You stomped the Schwab.
Like, I've heard that. And here's the thing. Like, if you're doing nothing, jumping on a trampoline is great. Mm-hmm. If you have the ability to, like, jump rope or, like, actually move around yourself, I think it's infinitely better. So that's kind of my...
There's a lot of side benefits. If your primary goal is to circulate lymph.
Sure.
No one's ever coming to the gym. And like, what are your goals? They're like, lymph circulation. Yeah, my wife is unsatisfied lymph circulation.
I'm going to go to a gym this weekend to check it out. And just so I can say that. Like, what is your goal? I'm going to drop one on a personal trainer. It's gonna be great.
Mike's going in. Do you guys have any trampolines here? Because that's a deal breaker for me.
Okay, so... You're also not saying necessarily that this is like a replacement for doing hardcore exercise. Like this is just something that you can add into your current routine that will help you feel better.
I think that's a really common misconception, and you end up getting a lot of divisiveness between people who associate with being like mobility people versus people who are strength people. And one of my like goals in life is to bridge the gap, because I think it's very cool to be able to do some awesome flow stuff. And I also think it's extremely cool to be able to deadlift 600 pounds. So I don't see them as competing ideals. I actually see them as two sides of the same coin. And just speaking for myself and the people that I've worked with, being better, being more mobile makes you stronger, makes you more resilient to injury. Being stronger gives you a better foundation to have good flexibility. And what I mean by good flexibility is a stable form of flexibility. Because I've worked with a lot of people who have very weak core, very weak legs, very mobile, but it's not in a positive way. Like they're mobile to the point where it's just like, you know, they're loose. You know what I mean? So there's like a spectrum. You know, you have a total rubber band on one side, then you have like a steel pillar on the other side. And the truth is, most people train as if they want to live as a steel pillar, right? The truth is, I think most of us would prefer a result from exercise somewhere in the middle, where you can be freaking rock hard, but also be pliable and flexible.
Rock
you know?
Hard.
Yeah. How old are we? You said rock hard, and me and Mike both smiled and looked at each other.
Why did you look at each other when I said that?
See, you guys talking about doing this podcast.
I'm going to be thinking about that all night now.
You guys have been doing this podcast together too long. A lot of lonely podcasting nights.
Yeah, we can read each other's minds. Yeah.
It's like on the Grip Strength episode. We're talking about me, Andy, and maybe even Kenny. We all had separate experiences sleeping next to Mike, and we know that he gets a little handsy. I walked through the room today, and that part of the episode was playing when my wife was listening to it, and she was like, "What are you guys talking about?"
I think it's amazing that Marcy listens to the show.
I love that she listens to the show. She listens to all of them.
My wife won't do it.
This took a turn.
Yeah. Sorry.
All right, so if people want to learn more about 5-Minute Flow, what is the process?
Go to 5MinuteFlow.com, or if you want to just kind of explore a little bit, if you just search for 5-Minute Flow and my name, Max Shank, you'll find tons of free information on that. But obviously the mobility system I put together kind of supersedes everything I had intended with 5-Minute Flow. Because remember, 5-Minute Flow, my intention was as little instruction as possible, as little equipment required as possible. Just seriously, go move, drink a glass of water in the morning. The end. But when I set out to make a product for it, and the only reason I did was because so many people asked me for it, I really wanted to make something comprehensive. So in the 5-Minute Flow product at 5MinuteFlow.com, what I've put together is a very comprehensive mobility system that includes core strengthening as part of the program. That includes strengthening the shoulders in different positions as part of the program. It includes various forms of locomotion like crawling and crab walking and monkey and bear and different things like that. And it also provides a foundation for how to weave them together specifically. So it takes everything from the isolation joint mobility movements like I just showed you there, and then I have some of what are called like primary positions, so like downward dog, upward dog, deep lunge position, thoracic bridge position, and then you link those up together in combinations, and then those combinations are put into full-fledged flows. And so if you need a little bit more direction exactly how to do it, I basically wanted to make it so what I do with all my products is I want to make it so you can start at complete level zero. And it's a lot more work, but I think that's really what determines a good coach, is if you're able to take someone who's really a total beginner and take them every step of the way into a really advanced athlete.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've read your Ultimate Athleticism book, which was very, very good. The simple Shoulder Solution, which we talked about on the last show we did with you about shoulders, is also very good. And then now this is your latest product that me and Mike have both seen that we both think is quite good. So we highly recommend it. We definitely want you to check it out. We have a promo code if you go to 5MinuteFlow.com and you want to invest in that product. It's Barbell, and they get 20% off.
20% off, yeah, man.
20%. So if you want to check it out, mm-hmm. I highly recommend it.
Yes, sir.
Sweet.
Is there anything else people should be checking out? Should they be watching your Instagram so you can swing sticks in your backyard as you walk on planks?
I think my Instagram is pretty cool, I guess. So. Yeah. I mean, there aren't a lot of people with the name Max Shank. So, I mean, like all my social media, it's all the same stuff. But I try to put out like 95% free stuff and 5% paid stuff through the course of a year. So I'm always putting something out there for free. I do an article every single week. Without fail for the last couple years. And, I just love this shit, which is why, obviously, I have the playground lab in my backyard, you know?
Yeah, excellent.
It's great.
Thanks for joining us.
Oh, yeah. Dude, thanks for having me on. I fucking love you guys.
Right on, dude. Thanks.
Cool.